CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we go to the surface of the planet Mars and look up into the sky. Bob Zimmerman is here to help us understand the probes on Mars, the orbiters and the rovers, and Ingenuity, the helicopter. And their mission statements are augmented by discoveries. In this case, it's a meteorological report, not from planet Earth, but from planet Mars. Bob, a very good evening to you. What does Curiosity show us? Good evening.
Good evening, John. They have these really great instruments and cameras on the rovers and the orbiters. And one of the things that's been routine in space exploration since the 60s is an effort by the scientists involved to squeeze every bit of knowledge out of the instruments and cameras that they can. You know, you send Curiosity to Mars to explore the geology of Mars, the ground and the things around it, as well as maybe get weather reports of what's going on. But you do anything you can think of to get more of the data is done. And so one of the things that they do periodically with Curiosity's high-resolution cameras is they point it to the sky, and they specifically point it to the sky just after sunset or during sunset, but mostly after sunset to see if they can detect clouds. They sometimes will do it in the morning as well, before sunset, sunrise, and looking for clouds. They're trying to find clouds in the atmosphere to try to understand better the atmosphere of Mars and how it functions. And so they get pictures of the clouds. I've posted them in the past. About a month ago, that I'm looking at the daily downloads, I saw this really great picture of a feather-like cloud in the sky near the horizon that Curiosity had taken. So I posted it. Well, this week, the science team released a press release talking about Curiosity's present cloud campaign. That's literally what it is. It's an oncoming cloud survey. They do it now on a regular basis, looking at the sky at twilight after the sun has set, to see if they see any clouds. Because after the sun has set, before it's dark, the sunlight comes up over the horizon and will hit the bottoms of the clouds and will illuminate them. And that illumination can tell them a lot of things about what they're looking at. For example, in this most recent campaign, they saw for the first time on Mars what they call sun rays. And this is when a sun sets, you know, the rays of the sun can radiate out in a pattern through the clouds to create, you know, beautiful patterns on Earth. Well, it's why people sit down to watch sunsets. You know, you see these kind of patterns. Well, they saw it for the first time in this cloud campaign, and they also saw this feathery cloud. And they explain what was going on here. This cloud is producing what they call iridescence. And the particle sizes through the cloud will change the color. In other words, apparently the particle sizes are the same or change in size not randomly, but in a certain area they're all the same size, but as you move away, the size changes, and the changing size will change the color. And that will tell them to, quote, by looking at the color transitions, we're seeing particle size changing across the clouds. That tells us the way the cloud is evolving and how its particles are changing size over time. So that's what they got here, and it's really quite beautiful. But once again, Mars is alien, so you're seeing a different kind of cloud process going on there that you need to understand.
On Earth, we call these noctilucent clouds. They call them the same on Mars. We're buddies of meteorological significance, although I note, Bob, in the report that you provide a link to, is it water ice, is it dry ice, is it carbon dioxide ice, is it all three?
Well, the dry ice is carbon dioxide ice, John, so it's only two, but I will say that we don't know in this case. They didn't tell me. It appears that it could be either, it could be both. The clouds on Mars, in previous reports, they've said that sometimes it's water ice and sometimes it's dry ice particles and solid. But in this case, they didn't specify, so I don't really know.
The meteorology of Mars. We go from Mars to the Starship landing zone. This is all right now speculation because we're waiting for Super Heavy and Starship to lift off in their maiden voyage. But what do we know about this landing zone? What is rich about it, Bob?
Water, ice. So in the past 5 years, Starship literally hired a consultant to recommend and get Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter this is a scientist consultant to recommend to Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter places to take pictures for a potential landing site for Starship. And they basically, this is a site that SpaceX has picked, and they wanted to get high resolution pictures of the region. They picked the region. It's in the northern hemisphere, the lowland plains, about 40 degrees latitude, in an area north of Olympus Mons. And the reason they picked this area is because there's a great deal of evidence to tell us there is near-surface ice. In fact, one scientist has said in a presentation, you could stick a shovel in the ground to hit ice. And so they picked this area, and they took a lot of pictures of the region. And as you say, John, it's speculation. We have Starship Super Heavy hasn't even launched yet, so getting it to Mars is we're not there yet. But you got to start planning where you're going to land. So this is approximately where they'll land. And, periodically I post cool images, and I came across a really cool image of some of this lowland plain terrain that will be near the landing sites. And it's basically the kind of stuff that tourists in that area will see. And so I posted a picture on Behind the Black. And as I recall, this is a flat plain interspersed with crater splats, mounds of a variety of sizes, and a puzzling meandering dark line that suggests a crack from which material is oozing. The geology to be studied here might be endless, but for tourists, the views will be astounding in their alienness. And it's really the case. This is one of those places on Mars in the lowland plains that is not going to look like anything on Earth once we land there, John.
SpaceX Bob, it's March. Isn't that the month when we pull the trigger? Isn't it now?
That's the hope. But once again, SpaceX says they're ready to go. They can't go until the FAA approves the launch license. And the FAA is twiddling its thumbs, and it's beginning to resemble more and more the UK's Civil Aviation Authority twiddling its thumbs and doing so in a way to exert power, but to squelch freedom and private enterprise. And that's what we're staring at right now.
To the image of Starship landing zone, what is it that the Starship is going to put down there, Bob? Is it a rover? I mean, have they told us what they're going to land on Mars?
They're going to land Starship. You got to remember how big Starship is. You could put probably, I'm guessing, roughly 10 Curiosities inside. This is a big, big spacecraft. And so the first few missions, if they've talked about that, will probably put on the surface supplies for the manned missions that would follow. And the first few missions will be like anything else, engineering tests to see if they can land. And then to see if they can, the hatch for the Starship is like, 100 feet off the ground? They got to figure out if their elevator system will work to get the equipment down to the ground. And so there's a lot of testing that will have to go on. But the main thing they're going to bring there is Starship itself and whatever is inside it as cargo.
Not a manned mission. Not the first one.
Not for a while.
We move from Mars to Juno. This is an image of a moon, Io. Juno is the probe, and Io looks spotty, almost as if it's had measles. Is this color corrected?
No, this is probably a pretty accurate color. One of my readers commented, it's a jumbo pizza, which is another possibility. Io is the most volcanically active planet in the solar system. It's a moon of Jupiter, but because of the tidal forces of the big gas giant, imposes upon it in its orbit around Jupiter, it's internally extremely hot and active. And so it has volcanoes, and it has volcanoes all over the place, and they're constantly erupting. In fact, the first active volcano ever seen off the Earth was one found on Io when the Voyager spacecraft first flew by. And so the taking pictures, they're always trying to see if anything has changed in these eruptions. And Juno made its first pass close of Io recently on March 1st. It got within 33,000 miles. It will do later flybys even closer. And it took 5 pictures. And so since the camera on Juno is not really high res, it's not the main focus of the mission. The scientists produce them. The instrument produces them, and they're released to the public, and the public is the one who processes them. So several citizen scientists have processed these images, and I've posted one and links to others, because depending on how you process it, different details come out. But what you're looking at here, the dark spots are volcanic activity. actual volcanoes, and the surrounding terrain is the lava that has flowed from them, and they change, and some are active and some are not, and some are high. So there's an example near the limb of the moon. There's a volcano that's likely 18,000 feet tall on a small planet.
Bob, can you tell, is there an atmosphere here? Can you tell?
The only atmosphere that exists on Io would be the material spewed out of the volcanoes that floats around the planet. It's too small to retain an atmosphere, but it would have, you know, it would have an atmosphere because its eruptions occur so frequently that some of that material is always there, either escaping or descending back to the surface.
And the source of energy is a core, or is the gravity of the planet?
It's the tidal forces imposed on the core of the planet, of the moon, by Jupiter, because it's so close to Jupiter,
right,
that heavy gravity churns up the inside and produces heat, which produces volcanic activity.
All right, we're going to the election of 2024, actually to the last weeks when we can expect a presidential debate. And if you recall your medieval superstition, is when a comet appears in the sky, it's the death or birth of kings and possibly wars breaking out or being solved. We have a big comet coming in October of 24. Coincidence, Bob?
Well, we also have to be careful because comets are notorious for not fulfilling promises. And so a comet was discovered simultaneously and independently by telescopes in China and in South Africa. It is named Comet Tuchanshan Atlas, as I think I'm pronouncing the Chinese name here correctly. And it is conceivably going to be the brightest object in the sky compared to stars, not the moon, when it makes its closest approach to the Earth in October of 2024. It could be as bright as magnitude -5, which would be similar to Venus. So that's quite bright for a comet, which means the tail on the comet would be quite striking in the sky. This comet has an 80,000-year-long orbit, and that orbit means it has actually passed the sun many, many times. So that it's still intact means it's probably not going to fall apart here, though there's no guarantees. But it also means there's a very good chance it will produce a great deal of brightness. However, we must always put the caveat in, let's not go nutso. There's a very good chance that it will also be a dud because comets are very unpredictable and we can't really say how bright they're going to be. We can only hope. And so stay tuned, October. Now, whether it has any influence on presidential politics,
I'll leave that to you. The metaphor of a comet in the sky suits perfect for presidential elections and debate. Yeah, we can imagine that the comet lore will be seeded all during the month. Now, one more thing. The IBEX is in safe mode. What is IBEX?
IBEX is an orbiter around the Earth. It's an astronomical inch telescope designed to actually study the boundary between interstellar space and our solar system. And I really don't understand. I've never been able to figure out from any of their paperwork how exactly it's able to do this from Earth orbit. But supposedly it's come up with some discoveries. About a month ago, it went into safe mode. They called it contingency mode, but it's essentially the same thing. It couldn't do science. It was not accepting commands from the ground. Well, it's now out of that safe mode, John. Things are, it's operational again. Everything is going well, and it's functioning normally. And basically, the engineers decided to send it a command rather than wait for an autonomous reset and power cycle on March 4th. They decided to send their own reset command again, and it worked. And basically the power cycle of the spacecraft, and they basically booted it up again, and everything is now functioning correctly.
Bob, safe mode happens in a variety of probes, a lot of satellites. They go into safe mode, then they come out. What triggers it? Is it something like cosmic rays just passing through the satellite? Do we know?
Safe mode is a programming state that every spacecraft software goes into if anything, not just cosmic rays, anything is not the way it's supposed to be. Now, in other words, the computer software detects something not right, rather than continue forward and making things worse, It will almost routinely fall into safe mode. And what safe mode is they shut down everything except the essential functions. and their its ability to communicate with Earth so that ground control can then obtain the data to find out what was wrong and then send up commands to fix it. And so therefore the spacecraft, will, when it comes out of safe mode, nothing's been damaged and it can once again fully function.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going space engineering. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.